Welcome to The Green Room, the podcast that bridges the gap between church production and every other aspect of a worship service. From programming directors to worship leaders, volunteers to vendors, tune in for inspiring conversations, expert advice, and a unique look into the intricate puzzle of church production. Here's your host, Aaron Freeman.
All right, we're recording. Josh, thanks for joining us today. Sure. This is super awesome. Josh Sullins, you are music director at First Brunswick Baptist Church.
Yeah, right? Yes, been the worship pastor there for 2.5 years at First Baptist Brunswick. I appreciate the invitation to be a part of this today.
Yeah, absolutely. This is fun. We've known each other for a couple of years through our wives. They're both in sort of the creative industry. And it's been cool getting to know you and your views on Sunday services and stuff like that. And I would love to just talk to you more about those kind of things. What's your thinking with church production involved with your side of the music planning and stuff like that? Like how does that integrate into your plan for a Sunday?
Sure. Yeah, I think it's a really good question. I think it's a lot of conversations that are being held in the worship ministry areas of churches these days. And we're all just trying to figure out exactly how to help people on their journey and their expression of worship to the Lord and incorporating that as a part of what's taking place on a Sunday morning. So it is literally taking the music, it's taking the scripture, it's taking the foundation, and it's taking the goal of where we want to take our people in their worship experience on any given worship service.
And production's just the sort of step of that and just broadcasting it or enhancing. Do you see it as enhancing or do you see it as just assisting?
Absolutely. I think that production in and of itself, everything that we do inside the church is ministry, right? And so when you look at it from the perspective of the worship ministry as a whole, everything that we have, all the tools, all the resources, production, you know, the music, all of those elements, the prayers, all of those things are part of what's taking place on the Sunday morning that enhances the worship experience as a whole.
No, that's great. I love that. Yeah, I know First Brunswick, I started seeing First Brunswick pop up more and more on TikTok with your former, now I guess, production guy there, Colby, which he's going to be on the podcast later, which is going to be fun to talk to him about the whole TikTok thing and how that's integrating. And I know he, I don't know if he did it, but like, I'd love to hear like your thought process on like integrating like the sort of the pre-show stuff, the interview and stuff. Was that Colby's idea? Was that your idea? The pastor's idea? Like how did that bubble up?
Yeah. Absolutely. So you mentioned Colby. Colby is hands down one of the best production directors I think that I've ever had the opportunity to work with in ministry. And he's just an incredible asset to any church. He definitely was a huge instrumental part of the production ministry at First Brunswick here. And I think as far as the pre-service time goes with that, just kind of preparing the people for the service, we wanted to make sure that we were connecting with people in our online community. Obviously, COVID made a huge impact in churches and their ministries and the reaches from a digital standpoint, social media, and it kind of caused us to have to step up our game to make sure that we were continuing to be able to reach our people because they weren't able to actually come into the building. And we still had the responsibility to share the gospel. So that was a huge influence. And I think First Brunswick for us, making sure that we would take the steps to continue to be able to minister to our people and to share the gospel. What we didn't realize, I don't know that it was in a initial thought process, was that it was able to expand our reach beyond the people that were a part of our church. And so the pre-service moment, it was really designed as just an opportunity to welcome people to the feed rather than just having, you know, your typical pre-service slides, what you would run if you were in the room, you know, just all of the announcements. The pre-service time was intentional to try to build the community aspect because that's something that's very important, I think, inside the walls of the church and outside of the walls of the church. So that pre-service moment was really used to just welcome people, build community, and just let them know that we're acknowledging that they're here and worship with us that day.
I know I've been somewhat involved in conversations around like the online community. What do we do with that? Are we using it to get people to the church, or are we doing it to just flat out just make sure that they hear about Jesus? You know, what was y'all thinking about that?
Well, I think in some cases, I think what we have to guard against in those conversations is making it an either or question. I think that, you know, ministry as a whole is to connect people to our Savior, right? Is to connect people to God. And I think that as we're using that element of our ministries as that tool, sometimes it might be if they're local and they're checking out the church for the very first time, then it might be an avenue to where their next step might be to attend in person. But if it's someone that's not local to the area, then that may be their form of worship and their form of connectivity in an online capacity. Or in our case, we have people from different countries that are watching our worship service online. And so there's ways for us to be able to connect with people from other countries that we would never have if not for that resource. So it's a both and, I think. Sometimes, yes, the goal is to connect people inside the church. And then sometimes I think that it's just to say, hey, we're glad that you're here. We want to connect with you and we want to minister to you in this kind of format as well. So I certainly think that it's a both and answer to that question.
I know for us, we're definitely not looking at it that way, unfortunately. I tend to agree that it, yeah, needs to be a both and, not and or, because otherwise, if it's a choice, then why do the online thing?
Yeah, I mean,
just
it's
stop
like,
and then just get people in the building.
Right. I mean, it's the question I think that we have to answer. If we're not just talking about production and we're not just talking about worship, we're literally just thinking about things from the aspect of ministry itself, right? And the Great Commission. And so in the most simplistic terms, we're just wanting to continue to be obedient to that Great Commission call and just sharing the gospel, right? And we know that our call as pastors is to equip people for the work of the ministry. So if that's the case, and we're kind of setting that as our parameters for what it is that we're doing with all of our ministries at the church, then as we're thinking about the online community, we're sharing the gospel, and then we have to figure out how to equip people. And the best way to equip people, obviously, is through discipleship. And we all know that discipleship is based in relationships and community. So I think those are important elements for any aspect of ministry in the church, not just production and not just worship ministry, but we have to make sure that we're all in alignment together with regards to that that goal and that philosophy of ministry.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. I like that. Getting on the online conversation, you know, I think it's a fascinating conversation. Like, it's a conversation that I think all churches are having now after COVID. You know, before it was the bigger churches that were like doing it. Mm-hmm. And then maybe some of the smaller churches were thinking about it, like, we're not going to invest in it. And then like, all of a sudden it was like, we need cameras and we need internet and we need like, let's go, let's do this. We need it now. We need it in next week. How was that transition for you guys? Were you guys streaming online before 2020?
No, First Brunswick was not streaming before COVID. And so this was one of those opportunities that I think that, again, the church did not even imagine what the capability would be. And I'm very thankful for their obedience to follow through and to provide the resources in order to establish that that avenue of ministry. And, you know, Aaron, I think that it's worth mentioning as we're talking about that and the conversation that's taking place in the church. You're now getting people to start having the conversation of, do we continue to do online streaming? Do we continue? Because I think that in a lot of people's minds, they think that in order for people to be engaged with the church, that they have to be in the four walls. They have if we can't get, you know, one of the struggles on the backside of COVID was, how do we get people to come back to our church? You know, and yes, we still want to reach them. We still want to present the gospel to them. We want to have as much community as we can, but we need to figure out a way to get them back into church. And some people, unfortunately, in my opinion, have made the decision to stop streaming in their platforms, their online platforms, in hopes that that will encourage people to come back to the church. But if we go back and we think back to that time period with relation to the pandemic, and we start thinking about the impact that online streaming was having with relation to the gospel and sharing, it was one of the best things that I think the church has done in recent history. And so I think I would encourage people to not shy away from that and not make their primary goal to get people back into the building. I think that we need to think in the terms of, hey, this is 2023. This is a digital age. And if we're using this from a corporate standpoint, and most businesses now, the church can't shy away from these resources that we've now been given. We have to learn how to embrace these things and use them in different ways in order to continue to do to fulfill the call that God has given to us. And I think rather than pulling back, I think we should be leaning in. I think we should be having more conversation about what happens to the people at the end of the worship service if they've joined us online. What is the next step? Yeah. What is the next step? How do we engage with those people who are interested in discipleship? You know, what are the next steps that we're giving to them? We do a good job of that, I think, in a lot of ways inside the church because the people are physically there in front of us. But I'm not sure that we continue to think about it in those terms with relation to the digital format. And I think that's an important conversation that needs to be explored inside the church for sure.
No, I love that. And that is something that I've been thinking about and posing questions to our team at North Point is like, what are we doing for the people online? Because there's a dedicated amount of people every single week.
That's right.
I'm so sorry. One sec. I've been signed out of Zoom. hold on.
And these are the necessary things that we all deal with every Sunday, right?
yes. I don't know how much you know about the North Point stream. Therefore, several years ago, you know, we did the online host and we played with the online community group thing. And then we leadership decided to stop doing those kind of things and just do a stream. And then that sort of ramped up with COVID, like we're just going to stream, like we're good. And then coming back in the building, all, you know, same story for a lot of churches, but you know, I've been thinking a lot lately, like very consistent numbers online. And we maybe acknowledge them once in the service. Yeah. I mean, we have next steps for them. There's some things that they can do, but it's not specific next steps for the people that are watching online or specific things that are acknowledging that, hey, there's this amount of people online. And so I've been, you know, playing with ideas and throwing out questions and just seeing what, you know, what we're willing to do and something low impact, but that acknowledges the people that are there.
Mm-hmm. And you know, Zoom has the capability, right? I don't know what the format is with regards to like the streaming options of your church. And I would really be interested in having the conversation too with our own ministry. With Zoom, you have the breakout options, right? You have the breakout rooms that are available. I would love to see something develop like that in the online community for churches. So that immediately as you have the people online in the service, they could have the option to go to a breakout room on the backside of that, where you have maybe two or three people that are in those rooms that can interact with them more face to face. You know, because as we know, the online stream, one of the holdbacks with that is that you can either type or sit silently, right? I mean, we always don't know the face to go with the user that's watching. But if we could establish some kind of way, again, if the goal is community, it's relationship, for the people to go in, have the option to go into a breakout room, say they're asking for prayer or saying they're wanting more information about how to connect to the church, or there's a specific thing and you label your breakout rooms and you prepare your people in those breakout rooms and say, At the end of your time, you're saying, hey, we're so thankful that you've joined us today. If you would like more information, we actually have breakout rooms that are prepared with people that would love to speak with you more. And here are some of the breakout room options. And if you would just choose one of these options and then go to this breakout room, we would love to take the next step with you and continue to connect with you and figure out how we can best minister to you. You know, so I think that's important. And going back to your thoughts in regards to, you know, a lot of the decisions being made, let's just stream or let's not really push as much of our focus towards connecting with, you know, the online community and that kind of capacity. At that point in time, I think that a lot of the justification in our thinking was there's fatigue here. Because the entire world, you were living on, you know, Zoom, you were living on all these platforms 100% of the time. And so the thought was, well, people are tired, you know, they're tired of doing this over and over. And because this is their only avenue. So it made sense for us not to follow through in those decisions because it was exhausting. You know, it was exhausting for the people. And the last thing that you would hear people say is, I don't want to be on one more, you know, Zoom call. I don't want to be on one more video call. However, I think that we've progressed enough of past that to where now this is a normal part of our culture. And it's not like it's a 24/7 thing like it was during the pandemic. Now it's an intentionality thing, right? And so I think that we need to go back to that conversation again and ask the question, now that we've crossed that bridge, is this something that we need to reexamine? Is this a conversation that we need to have again? And I think my opinion is that there's some real benefit to this for churches that we've not yet scratched the surface on from, you know, a large perspective. So I think it's definitely worth the conversation.
Well, and culturally too, I mean, just businesses, you know, the office space thing. People aren't going back to the offices. People aren't going, you know, back into the rows and churches. Like there's been a shift to staying at home and doing things online. Whether, yeah, I mean, obviously that was because of COVID, but also, you know, the internet infrastructure has gotten better in recent years. So it's enabled those kind of things. Mm-hmm. And there's not a need to drive 2 hours down into downtown Atlanta to sit in a cubicle anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
And people are just rejecting that flat out.
I agree 100%. I think as we're looking at the upcoming generations that are completing college, I think that with a lot of them, that is the expectation, is they're looking for opportunities in the workplace where they can work remotely. Why not? Because that's been a major part of their educational experience on the back end of things, right? And so I think that it's an important conversation. I think that some people would go, and if they were listening to this today, some people I think would say, well, this is an old conversation or this is an old point. Yes, it is an older idea and it's an older concept because here we are on the backside of the pandemic. However, I think that my challenge to that thought would be this. As a society, as a people, as a culture, we tend to drift towards what is comfortable. And we cannot allow ourselves to drift towards what is comfortable, especially when it comes to the advancement of the gospel. Churches have to continue to lead, and they have to continue to step out and be willing to try things that may or may not go well. We cannot fall back into the practice of this is our set worship time. This is our set worship stream, and this is good. We're firing on our cylinders. We've got a great attendance out there with our web presence, you know, and stop the conversation. I think that we have to continue to ask the question of ourselves as leaders, so is this all there is? Is there another step? Is there additional things that we can do to continue to push this forward? You know, I think that's one of the things that in leadership that we struggle with sometimes. I think that we just, you know, think about what's happening from Sunday to Sunday or from day to day. And we have to take that time to step back and dream and ask God what the vision is, you know, and reexamine the resources and I mean, a long time ago, Rick Warren, you know, his whole simple church strategy to where churches were listing every ministry of the church on the whiteboard and then trying to figure out what items and what ministries continued to support the overall direction and philosophy and the DNA of the church. Great concept. We need to go back to that. We need to have those conversations again periodically in the church as leaders, and we need to ask ourselves the questions again. All right, so now here we are on the backside of the pandemic. We've made these adjustments with regards to our church ministries. Now, what is it that we need to do to continue to move forward with our reach and with our ministries? And how do we continue to share the gospel with these tools rather than just going, okay, this is what's working. It's working great. You know, if it's not broken, let's not fix it. Yes, that, to some degree, but we have to constantly be moving. Complacency, I don't think, is an option with regards to the gospel and the aim and the direction of the church. So,
well, and I mean, if you look from, you know, the first century to now, I mean, so much has changed. So why would you expect that it would stay the same?
Right. But unfortunately, we do. Unfortunately, we do. Right. I think that that's where the church really loses our momentum. We really lose our influence when we don't continue to move and to explore those ways to promote the gospel. The secular world is doing it, you know, and it's not like we've got to be like the secular world, but we certainly don't want to be, dismissive to the tools and the resources that are available. We want to embrace those things, and we want to figure out how we can utilize those for the gospel, for sure.
Production wise, the church, you know, embracing the, you know, video, you know, all the production gear, like eventually the church, hey, we can do this and we can reach way more. We can get more people in a room because we have speakers, because we have microphones. As opposed to, and some would argue that it's a good thing, bad thing. I think it's a good thing because that's my job. But
absolutely, you know, yeah. And I think that that's a conversation. I mean, let's face it. All right, in church ministries, again, I think that we get focused on what needs to take place in between the Sunday to the Sunday, and in addition to those things, ministry is people. So I think that we focus on how we minister to the people as well. And when we think about our responsibilities as leaders in totality, that's the majority of our time. It's Sunday to Sunday and what has to happen operationally. And then it's the people in the ministry and what we need to do to fulfill the needs and best prepare and minister to the people. But again, I think this is more of a leadership issue. We have to intentionally carve out the time to be before the Lord and to ask him what he wants and to dream. And if we do not take the time to dream, then we find ourselves where we are and just continuing to do and to maintain every single week. But we cannot let ourselves fall into that pattern. We have to continue to push. We have to continue to seek after what new opportunities might be out there. We have to continue to be creative. And we have to be okay with trying it and potentially failing at it, right? I mean, I was telling a good friend of mine this past week, I said, you know, as a parent, and I know that you'll identify with this as well, as a parent, when our child takes the first step, you're like, oh, that's awesome, you know, and it's like the best thing. And then they may take one or two steps and they fall. And you know what we still do? Oh, it's all right. It's all right. You're going to get back up again. But we quickly forget that when it comes to adulthood and when it comes to trying things for the first time. We should constantly, as leaders, be looking at our peers and even encouraging ourselves, going, okay, I'm going to take a couple of steps. I might fall. But here's the deal. It's okay. We're going to celebrate it both ways. We're celebrating the taking of the steps. We're celebrating the moment that the falling is taking place. And then we're encouraging people, get back up and let's take more steps, you know? And I think we have to have more of that, especially inside the church.
Yeah. I've always said I would rather have tried than to have just had this idea and not done anything with it, you know, just rattled around in your brain. All right, well, let's try it. And you know what, if I didn't see something and it was like, oh, well, can't do it. Okay. Well, I'm glad I found that out. And now maybe I can pivot with that idea. Maybe through the process, I found something else that we can try and we can go from there. Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. I love what you said about, well, I mean, I think we all know this. We just don't put words to it, but ministry is people. And, you know, in church services, it takes a lot of people to plan the band, to do the audio and the video and stuff like that. What are some ways that you guys at First Brunswick are ministering to those people, loving on those people that are helping you week to week?
Sure. I think it's a great question. And I think it's an important question that we all need to consider. When you're in that pastoring role, I think that your people have to know that you're their biggest support. You're their biggest cheerleader. You're their biggest encourager. Again, I think if we go back to Ephesians 4 and we talk about the equipping of the saints for the work of the ministry, I think that in any leadership position, there's a pastoral aspect to that. And you have to be constantly equipping people and loving people and discipling people. And if they don't think that you care, then there's not going to be the level of investment in the ministry that I think the Lord deserves. I mean, he deserves our best, right? So as the people are serving in our ministry areas, we've got to step back away from it again as leaders, and we have to acknowledge these people are not here for me. They're not here for me. They're here because God has stirred in their heart. This particular position aligns with a passion or something that they feel is important or something that they feel like they can do well. And it's their area of contribution to not only serve the church, but it's also their aspect of worship, right? And so I think that if we are not careful, we can get caught into that thinking of, well, these people are here for me. They're here to serve for me, with me in my ministry, in my ministry. And I think that we have to, again, I think that we have to put it in the right perspective, and we have to realize that this is God's people, and these people are here for God to serve him. And it just so happens to be in an area where God has called me to be as the over-shepherd of the people, and is my responsibility to be a good steward of the people and their time and their resources and their situations, and at the same time making sure that I'm fulfilling my responsibility to disciple them and to equip them. It is a thing, again, when we are caught up in checking the boxes, right? If we just check the boxes, we miss that aspect. And so I think that it's an important thing for us to love on our people that way, to remember the things in that kind of perspective, and, constantly, not just get caught up in checking the boxes, pushing the buttons, and fulfilling the duties and the responsibilities. We have to remember, these people are here, and none of us have arrived to that place of perfection yet. All of us are all on our own individual journeys with the Lord, and there are seasons that come with that. There are good seasons. There are bad seasons. A good friend, I'd heard him recently say, if you're not in a battle, you're going into a battle, or you're coming out of a battle. And so I think that's important to remember as the people are around us. We're all in one of those seasons for sure.
And I know that it doesn't necessarily take a lot of time to make sure that that person is seen and acknowledged. I do my best to write thank you notes, on Sunday mornings. I'll take a note of like, oh, hey, that was great. Write a few names down. And then during the week, I'll write them a thank you note. And almost every time, the next time I see them, they're like, oh my gosh, thank you. And I'm like, well, no, thank you. Like, I'm glad I had to write that thank you note, because like, we wouldn't have had, graphics on the screen if you weren't here last week.
That's right.
Thank you for doing that, or whatever it is. Like, and that's not to say that I'm doing everything right. Right. I'm just, just do the small things. It's like, hey, just like, thanks for being here Sunday. Like, thanks for being here at 6:40 and staying for both services.
And like, I think it's those small things, Aaron, that make the difference for sure. Another element that we've started utilizing with our worship teams even is as we finish walking through with our sound check with and making sure that everything is good from the technical aspect prior to the worship services, we've started bringing the team together in a big circle on the platform itself, and just taking a moment to be reminded that we're not here to promote ourselves this morning. The microphone is not more important than the message that we have to share.
All right. Yeah, absolutely.
The talent is not more important than the God which we're exalting this morning, you know, and then to remember, you know, we're here because God's given us these talents and we're using these talents to serve Him. And then remembering the fact that it will be someone's first time in the room. And it just might be that that person who's there for the very first time doesn't know the Lord. And so we have to keep all of those things in the right perspective, you know, and reminding one another that it's not about us. This is not about our own elevation. This is about elevation of the Lord. And then at the backside of that, before we begin to pray, like you said, thanking them. Just thanking them for being here on time, right? Being here on time and being when they did get there, thanking them for being prepared, you know, and then just asking them that final question before the beginning of the worship time together. Now, I'm thanking you for preparing your heart to fulfill God's call on your life and being here in this spot this morning. You know, I think all of those things are huge. Huge things that the people, that our people need to hear, and myself included. I have leadership that when they tell me those kinds of things, it's that encouragement to me, you know, and what I do. And so I certainly want to pass that along and encourage the people who serve as a part of our worship teams and production teams as well. So
that's great. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Your worship team or worship band, I know you all have a choir too. All volunteer. Yes.
It's all volunteer. That's right.
All volunteer. How does that play into your vision and your thought process when you're planning stuff? Cause, you know, at in North Point, we're finding, they're paid musicians. So, you know, we can ask them to do X or Y or show up for midweek rehearsal or stuff like that. How does that differ with completely volunteer led on stage, off stage?
I think it's another really good question. And I think that is what you would find in a lot of churches in America is that most people that are serving in their churches, are volunteer. And even in a lot of pastoral aspects are volunteer or bivocational. And so I think, again, going back to what I mentioned before, the people are not there for me. They are there because God has stirred in their hearts and given them these talents, and they're using them for the Lord, making sure that I keep that perspective in front of them so that we keep everything in the right focus. But here's what that allows me to do as a pastor. Again, going back to what I mentioned before with regards to equipping the people for the work of the ministry. So this is where I'm able to say, I know that you're here because God has called you here. I know that you're being obedient to be here and to serve. And so one of the things I want to encourage you to do is to consider the talents that God has given you. God's not asking you to offer Him perfection, but what God is asking you to do is to give Him your best. And so what we want to do as a part of a team that's made up of volunteers is we all want to be able to give Him our best. And that looks different on a subjective level for each individual person, right? So you encourage them in those kinds of ways to constantly be giving their best to the Lord, not to me. I mean, does it make me happy when I see you giving your best? Yeah, it does. But that's not the end goal. The end goal is your offering of worship to the Lord through the talents that He's given to you. And why would you not want to give Him your best? You know, I think that's a hard issue if you can walk away from that question and go, oh, no, I just didn't have time to do it this week, or I'm so sorry. You know, I don't apologize to me. Your offering is not to me. You're not here for me. You're here for the Lord. And so I think at the end of the day, when you're giving that offering back to him, that's where the offering of praise. I think you can go to the scripture with Samuel. Samuel said it with the threshing floor and with his offering of back to the Lord. He said, "How can I sacrifice that which costs me nothing?" You know what I'm saying? And so when it comes to worship from a volunteer level, we know they have full-time jobs. We know they have families. We know they have responsibilities. We know that life is happening to those people. And we know when they're in a volunteer capacity under our leadership, they're having to make this sacrifice. They're having to carve out the time to be able to prepare themselves to come and lead, right? And we have to acknowledge that. But again, it's the encouragement from us to the people to give their best, you know, and to use that as their aspect of worship to the Lord. And I've often said this, if from a volunteer aspect, if the people who are serving in my ministry, if it starts to feel like a job to them, something's wrong. Something is wrong when we walk into God's house and we feel like we're having to perform a job. We come into the Lord's house to worship, and it has to always be in that perspective. This is my act of worship unto the Lord. This is my sacrifice of worship to the Lord, and not be framed as these are my responsibilities as a part of the position. You know, we have to understand that it's our sacrifice to the Lord, you know, and honestly, Aaron, that should be paid or unpaid, in my opinion.
Yeah, because I was just thinking about that. Yeah,
I think if the heart is not in the right position from the beginning, then the product will not be from the right place in the end. Right. And so paid or unpaid, the heart has to be in the right spot. Because John teaches us that the Lord seeks after those who are worshiping him in spirit and in truth. And you can't qualify for what it is that the Lord is even looking for if the heart is not in the right position to begin with. And I think that's our evaluation point. I think that's our check in our heart as we're getting ready to step our feet on to the platform to, you know, to be in our positions, whatever it is, whatever capacity it is for that morning.
Hmm. With all that being said, and it's great, love that. What's the like the hard conversation like, or like, hey, maybe singing on stage is not a good fit for you because you can't sing. Like, what's okay. That look like? Or like lyrics on the screens, they're always late. We can't get them on time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what does that look like for that? With that in mind.
Yeah, the hard conversations, man. I don't think any of us enjoy that. But I think that it's a necessity, again, from a leadership perspective. And my conversations, I've always tried, what I have learned is, number one, you have to figure out what the perception of the individual is, right? If I'm going into a situation and I know that I'm going to have to end up having a hard conversation, I think that one of the things that I have to remember is the only perception that I can actually control is mine. And the response that I have, the response I can only control is mine. So before I can even begin to have a hard conversation with someone who may not be executing at the level that needs to be executed, I have to figure out what their perception is. What their perception and the expectation is, right?
Okay.
Like, right. I need to know what they think. So my conversations will usually start like this. Man, I'm so glad that you were here this morning. You know, so thankful that you're a part of what we're doing. How did you think this morning went? How did you feel like this morning? Like, did you feel like all of the lyrics were on the screens at the appropriate times? Or did you feel like all the lighting cues hit the way that you wanted them to? Or did you feel like if you were singing that song, did you feel like that? Did that feel good, you know, as you were singing and worshiping the Lord this morning? Like, talk to me about that. Let me know what you're thinking. And then based upon what the individual is thinking, that then lets me know as a leader, what I can say next, right? Because it's not always a conversation. Those hard conversations don't always go from A to Z in one sitting, right? So it has to be a progression. So you may only be able to go from A to C in your first conversation. And then as a leader, you have to think, okay, if I can get this far and help them understand these expectations here in these small increments, then let's stop, let's evaluate. And then you come back again and you ask some of the same questions. Tell me about it. How did you think this went? And then it lets you take the next step. Now you can have the conversation from D to F, right? And then so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So
if you need to.
You need to, they may self-correct, which is what we want, right?
Right.
I mean, having those opportunities to where those things can be situated. So I think that if, again, in those hard conversations, I think we have to have them in small increments. I think that we need to have them, the hard conversations is always, the end goal of the hard conversation is always to help the individual or help the whole. And so coming in with critical feedback in a negative way is not ever going to truly help the individual in the best way, because what's really going to wind up happening is they're going to get frustrated, they're going to get mad at you, they're going to get upset with you, and they're going to quit. And then how have you equipped that saint for the work of the ministry? You know, and again, you know, if you're having this conversation, you're at P, Q, R, S, you know, you're on down in the conversation. I think that at that point, you can say, I've done everything that I can to help the individual. And then you can ask the question, or then you can make the statement, you know what? You've been working really, really hard. And I appreciate that so very much. All of the progress and all of the things that have been made, you know, with regards to the things that are happening with part of our team on Sunday morning. And I can't tell you how much that means to me. And I love the conversations that we're being able to have together and just how we've grown closer together as friends, you know, through this process. But I just need to be honest, and I need to tell you, maybe it's that point to where we need to look at how we can utilize other talents and other gifts and other skill sets that you may have in another position. And I cannot tell you again how much I've appreciated your dedication and your faithfulness to be here as a part of what the team is trying to achieve together. Maybe we just need to switch some seats around for you, because I know that your heart is in the right place, and the heart is what matters the most, right? So I want to be a good steward of the skills that God has given you and the talents that God has given you. So are you willing to take some steps with me and to try out some different chairs? Or to try out some different responsibilities? You know, again, it's never to hurt the people. It's never to tear them down. It's always to build them up. And it's always to encourage them, because we're all on the same team together. These are my brothers and sisters in Christ. And we're all in this giant army together. And the last thing I want to do is shoot somebody, you know, that's on my team, or that's a part of the army that God has assembled together. So I think that it's important, you know, to encourage in those hard conversations like that, and to remember, it's all from a standpoint of equipping, and these things are all from a position of love and support and encouragement, and just trying to help as best as you can. And again, as a leader, I think that's the call. I think that's the responsibility. I think we have to have those conversations in order to be fulfilling the call that God has for us in those aspects. So,
yeah, that definitely goes into the sort of the conversation of people over product, which I know, you know, production guys, you know, and I think everybody in church has to walk that line of, we want to put out a really good product. But it can't be over the people that are helping us do that.
Yeah.
It's just product, like,
yeah. The product cannot be at the sacrifice of the person.
Mm-mm. No,
it cannot. No. That's right. That's right.
And I know, you know, churches deal with that all the time. Some churches do it better than others. Some churches don't even have that conversation. And I think that might be some of the problem with the modern evangelical church. Or maybe just the big prominent ones, is that it seems to be product over people, And, you know, it's frustrating because churches get lumped into it just as a whole. And you're like, wait, we don't do that. But it's the perception of everybody outside that it's like, oh, you just want to do this and you don't care how you do it. You just need all this volunteer help and you just use your people. And you're like, well, no, you know, we treat our volunteers really well. So yeah, it's just one of those things where it's like, yeah, no, we are people over product all the time.
Right. Yeah. Or should be. Again, because ministry is people. It has to be that way. Yeah. And the cool thing is, Aaron, you and I both know this. As long as the people are the focus, as the investment is being made, the discipleship is in place, the relationships are being formed, the heart is in the right place, then the payoff on the long term is an elevated ministry, right? It's not an overnight change. We get caught in this thinking that if this person can't do it, okay, we got to get rid of this person so that we can find the person that can, you know, and then we build the ministry on all the capable people that can do the positions from the beginning, right? And so that makes it easier for us to, you know, develop and to execute and to make the product. But how have you discipled? How have you equipped?
Have you involved people that want involved? To be involved in your church?
Right. Absolutely. How is this brother or sister in Christ going to look back over the course of their life or their service in the church with you as their pastor and say, wow, thank you so much for investing and discipling and being patient with me and teaching me and helping grow me in my walk with the Lord and the talents. How can they have those things to say about us if we're always just looking for the best qualified person to sit in the chair, you know? And I think that's a huge part of, you know, I think that's something that we as leaders have to really stop and think about more.
Well, and whatever interaction they've had is going to play an impact on whether they recommend a friend or a family member come try out that church. Like,
absolutely.
If they like, oh, I tried to volunteer there and like, you know, I messed up. And then they asked me not to come back. Like, they're not going to tell their family and friends that they should go to that church. Mm-hmm. And that's just it's sad and it really shouldn't happen. Yeah. And things happen. I understand that sometimes there's interactions that are unfortunate and probably nothing you can do about it, but you know, you should at least do your best to have positive and helpful conversations with all the people that are, you interact with the church.
Right. Well, and again, you know, you mentioned earlier, we're in a season of interim with regards to our production team at our church. And we have some volunteers that have been prepared well. Even from the departure of our production director, he did a good job of preparing his team. And I'm very encouraging of those who have stepped up to not hold everything, you know, and not keep a grasp on everything just because, you know, the expectation is we want to execute how it has been in the past. Well, yes, we do. But also we have to extend grace for those moments where it isn't. And then we have to give people the opportunities to learn and to grow. And so in order to do that, instead of holding everything tight, you really have to let it go and encourage people in their own growth. So I'm very proud of the team. It just, even in this short window that we've already experienced as part of the interim, but it's hard to encourage people when they feel the pressure. Even as a volunteer, they feel the pressure and they think, okay, if I can just keep it, then I can make sure. But again, it's about more than just one individual. So it's constantly encouraging. It's all right. We're going to let that go. We're going to delegate this here. We're going to delegate this here. We're going to show this person this. We're going to spend some time here. And again, the team as a whole is stronger and receives the benefit, and ultimately the church receives the benefit, and the advancement of the gospel is better because of the level of the whole has been raised. So,
well, what are the conversations been like? You know, finding a replacement. Like, I know this was the first sort of production director that First Brunswick had had. So, like, do you think that leadership found it to be a positive thing, or are you having to sort of try to fight for that role again? Or because I mean, you know, production roles sometimes, depending on the church, can feel as needed. Like, I think we're good. No, I don't know.
I think that we're in a very good position. I think that our leadership is very supportive of the role in our church. And I think that a large part of that is contributed to the success of Colby during his tenure there, and showing the impact that that position can have towards the overall goal of the church to advance the gospel. I think he did a very good job at that. And so, no, I don't feel like I'm having to fight again for that position. I think that there is, I think that there's a realization, and that there is a understanding that it is a huge need for our church and what it is that we're trying to achieve here. I think as far as the search goes, I think that that's one of the things that we're currently walking through, and trying to make sure that we're not asking too much of one individual. It always makes me laugh, you know, when I'm looking at all of these job responsibilities and all of these different places, and trying to gather a feel for where positions are developing. And I'm like, my goodness gracious, you've got a piece of paper filled with responsibilities, and there's no way that you can set up an individual to be successful with everything that's listed here as a part of this. And I think that sometimes we think that in order to justify the financial aspect of the position, then we have to fill up this long list of things, you know, and that's just not true. You know, someone has said that somewhere, and that's what has happened as a part of that. But I think that instead of trying to major on all those minors with regards to job positions that we're trying to fill in the church, we need to go back and major on the majors. And we need to understand that in order for something to be done well, it has to be very specific tasks. And then those very specific tasks have to be done at that level of excellence. And so you've got to set up the individual in that kind of way. So that's where I think that we are in the process is figuring out how not to create a unicorn position. We want to be very intentional and finding the skill set that is needed in that chair in order for the success to continue.
Yeah. What do you think that those characteristics are for, like, this is the person that I'm looking for? Or I mean, just in general, not specifically for First Brunswick or whatever, like, what are you, as, because you're over the music and sort of production, like, right?
Yeah.
Well, like, what does that person look like?
Well, I think the conversation can't start with what the person can do. I think that the conversation has to start with, where is the heart of this individual? What is their understanding of a director position in the church with regards to ministry? What is their understanding of the call of God in their life in this capacity in the church? I think that's where the conversation has to begin. And I think that the individual has to be qualified there first, before you can even get to what it is that the individual needs to do. Does that make sense? So the heart has to be in the right position. And then, you know, once it's determined, hey, this person's tracking, you know, they match and they're aligning with the DNA and our pastor's message for our church and for our people, and it's alignment with that kind of role within the church, then you begin to have the conversation, and you just ask the question, what are you passionate about? I think that's where it has to start, right? I think that, again, I think this is backwards But I think that a lot of this has to be backwards because you see the mistake being made over and over and over. A person comes into a position and they think that there's a cookie cutter approach to solutions for all the problems that they have, you know, and I don't think that that's the way to do it. I think that you have to have the conversation from the place of what is it you're passionate about? What is it that God is calling you to do? And you have to have that conversation. I think that's how the process should go when looking to fill the positions in the church. And then when you finish having the conversation with the individual about what they're passionate about, then you take those answers and you go, okay, what is it that our church is passionate about in this position? And you say, all right, where's the similarity? Right? Because if you hire a person whose passions are not in alignment with what the passions are of your church, you're setting yourself up for failure because the passions are not aligning, right? So I think that we have to approach it from that standpoint and making sure that as we're having the conversation, we're not sitting here having an interview based upon the list of things in the job description. We should be having an interview based upon what it is that the passions are of the person and how that is helping them answer the call of God in their life. And then we have to make sure that that's in alignment with where the church is going, where God is calling the church, where the pastor is presenting the vision. And then we can continue to move forward in that process if all of those things are aligning. We get forced into the idea because there's an empty chair. We go, oh man, we just got to get this chair filled. We just got to put this person in this seat. You know, we got to have this stuff done, you know. But again, it's a long game. It's not a short game. The short game will get you in trouble. It's the long game that matters. And so we have to make sure, again, the heart, the passions, then the skills, and then making sure that everything is alignment from there.
So you're sort of making more of an argument for almost like production pastor, kind of like you want this. Necessarily seminary trained, but you know, like,
well, I don't know if it's production pastor, Aaron, but I do think that we have to all stop and remember that we're all called to be ministers of the gospel. And if you want to call it a production director, a production director whose responsibility is to oversee the production ministry, I think that that's good. I think I could go along with that because, again, it's a ministerial aspect. This is the separation. This is where you see in churches, you see churches that operate like a business, right? Or you can see churches that operate as a ministry. And I think this is the distinction in between the two. A church that operates like a business is literally going to go back to their interview process and they're going to interview based to fill the position based upon what the job description is, because that's what a secular business does. But a church is ministry focused. And in order to be ministry focused and operate as a ministry, they have to figure out what the call of God is. They had to figure out what the call of God is for the church, what the call of God is for the person. And they have to ask their questions based upon the person's heart for the Lord, for the people, for the ministry. And they can't, you can't interview based upon a job description. It's got to be based upon what the ministry call is. That's where I think that you see the two breakdown in the ways that the churches operate. You know, are we going to be ministry focused or are we going to be business focused? You know, and I think that unfortunately, more often than not, you find in especially in larger churches, you find more of that business mentality, which I'm not necessarily saying it's a bad thing. I think that there's elements of that that need to be enforced. But if the gospel is not the focus, I think that it's the wrong target inside the church with regards to an operation philosophy.
When you're thinking about a church that operates like a business and then people that are on staff at that church are looking at like a ministry, then you might be trying to find that unicorn person that is doing what you're doing. But then leadership might be trying to find someone that can just execute.
That's true.
Whatever that thing is. Yeah, it's interesting. That's some really good things to think about. Because I definitely think that that person needs to do both. I mean, and that might be a unicorn person to be effective. Well, and two, like, I mean, production director or production for the church has only been around for 30 years, maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So the churches might just be figuring out what that looks like. Yeah, that's really interesting. I like that because, you know, on a Sunday morning, depending on the size of your church, like, you might be mostly dealing with people. And it just goes back to the rest of our conversation. It's just, it's people focused. Even though, yeah, the camera might not turn on or microphones having some issues, most of the time it's ministering to people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's really cool. I've never thought about it that way.
I agree.
But that's super good. Is there anything else that you feel you want to talk about in regards to like church service, production, those kind of things, or reiterate?
I would just go back and just reiterate that the position of the heart has got to be, we have to have our hearts in the right place. And I understand 27 years in ministry, there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of expectation. And I have to fight against that as well. And making sure that, you know, my heart is in the right place before I step my foot on the platform and before I can even encourage someone else in the position of their heart to look in their heart, I have to be at that place first. That takes my own personal time in the word and in prayer and seeking after God. And I have to make sure that I'm holding myself accountable in that first, before I can hold other people accountable to that. So, and again, I think these things are transferable concepts across the board with regards to ministry. So,
well, and can I ask what you do? If it's too personal, please.
No.
You're walking in on a Sunday morning. Are you listening to the music? Are you preparing yourself, or is it a day-to-day thing? Obviously, but like Sunday mornings, you're going in. Mm-hmm. Is there something that you specifically do onto that platform?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. So I'm always on the drive to our church campus. I'm always listening to the music, and as I'm listening to the music, I'm in prayer, and I'm asking God to help make sure that I'm doing my best to lead the people in the direction that we're trying to go for that morning. I'm praying, I'm asking the Lord to help everything go okay, and to help me in the moments, even when things may not be going okay, to always respond, you know, as best as I can with grace and with love. So I'm in prayer over those things as I'm driving and I'm listening to the music. And then I'm praying for the lost as I'm on the way. I'm like, God, I know that there's going to be somewhere in this room, someone in this room today that doesn't know you. And my prayer is ultimately that they would come to know you today. So that's a huge part of the process on my drive to the church campus. And then as I'm coming in the doors of the building, you know, obviously I know it's early and I know people are being asked to be there at early times. And so I'm trying to be encouraging and very thankful to the people. So a lot of those things are what's happening just to prepare my heart before I'm even there. Again, I think that's a huge part of the responsibility in the pastoral role is just to make sure my heart is good in the right place and that I'm ministering to the people from the moment that I get there and the first person arrives on the campus. So,
no, that's great. I have another question if you've got time.
Yeah.
That I just thought of. You know, you mentioned, and I think we all think about this, the person maybe new, first time in your church. What is your thinking, you know, balancing the person that maybe has never come to church before versus the person that's heard this song 7 times already? What's your thinking, and are you trying to find a balance when you're planning songs for a service or planning what your service looks like, or what's that look like for you?
Well, I think that there's several different approaches, obviously, to that. I think that at the end of the day, whether it's something that's familiar to a person that's been there several times, or whether it's something that's unfamiliar to a person that's never been there, I think that that's a, I think that's a secondary thought, with regards to picking music or experiences like that. I think that the primary thought is this real? Is this authentic? Is this authentic? Is this, am I the same on the platform as I am off the platform? Is this an extension of my spiritual journey? You know, is this real? Am I real in my response to the Lord? And I think if the answer to that question is yes, then I don't really think it matters whether a person has heard a song 100 times or one time, because I think the authenticity of the individual and of the team is what communicates to the person more than the song choice, more than the programming aspect. I think people want real.
What kind of like is, I mean, we throw the we use those words real, authentic a lot, like authenticity. And well, I understand that's like, what would be something that you would do that you wouldn't feel authentic doing? Like what does that look like
Well, I think,
tangibly?
sure. Well, I think that we can see that found in conversations in the church with regards to the expression of worship. From a presentation aspect, I think that yes, there is an expression of worship, and there are times where expression of worship, you know, the individual may express that with lifting hands. There may be a time to where the expression of worship, the individual may be moved emotionally to cry or to kneel. And I think that that is where the authenticity is shown. And I think if the motivations there in the heart is that, well, I need to raise my hands just so that I'm active in front of the people, you know, and that I'm trying to evoke a response from them. So I'm going to jump up and down on the platform because I feel like that is the expectation in order to reach that level of emotional hype, I guess would
Okay.
be the
All right.
word there.
I see what you're
Then
saying. Yeah.
my motivations and my heart is not authentic and it's not real because I'm trying to meet the expectation of what I think is expected or the thing that is expected from me in this. And I think people can see through that super, super quick, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, go
Even if
ahead.
it's a way to get people to engage. I mean, I'm not necessarily saying that they should be jumping around on stage or raising their hands, but like, is there a spectrum of performance to authenticity to try to get people to engage with the music? I don't know if that makes sense. I agree with
It's
you,
very deep. That's a very deep
well,
question.
and I agree with you, like raising hands, like if I, you know, if when not if when I'm in the, you know, the church service, and if I raise my hands, like that is not authentic. Like if you see me raising my hands, it's probably because I'm hurt or I need to get out, you know, during a worship service, because it's not going to
Right.
happen. I did
Right.
not grow up doing that kind of thing. So
Right.
I understand that aspect. Like, yeah, absolutely. Like if you're just doing it, you know, like, oh, you know, bridge two, I'm going to raise my hands. Yeah, totally. But like as worship leaders, you know, or musicians on stage, what kind of responsibility is there to have your congregation engage with you? Is it
I
your
didn't.
responsibility to get people to engage? Well, and it's not engage with you, and that's where I think we get it mixed up too.
Is my
But it's
responsibility to engage with people. It is the worship leader's responsibility to engage with people, but it is not the responsibility of the worship leader to make the person worship. Does that make
Yeah, okay.
sense?
I mean,
Yeah. So I want to do my best to engage with the individuals in the presentation of the worship unto the Lord. So, yes, but in that presentation and in that effort to engage with them, I don't want to feel like I'm performing. I don't want to feel like I'm doing something because I feel like it's an expectation of a performance. I want to engage with them because my mannerisms, my expression of worship. I want to engage with them through just the authenticity of my heart as I'm telling God how awesome he is, or if the lyrics of the song is telling how awesome he is to the people, or if the lyrics of the song is more testimonial and talking about an experience that God's of God's faithfulness through that. And this is what I often encourage the people in our choir and in our worship ministry to consider. As you're singing these lyrics, find your point of connection. You know, you have to find a way to, for the lyrics to connect with you in some kind of aspect in your own walk with the Lord, so that as you're offering these lyrics up in worship to the Lord, or as you're singing these lyrics over the people, there's an aspect of connectivity with that. I think that's where the authenticity comes from, versus this is a song that we're going to sing this morning. Here are the notes that are on the page. Here are the parts. Here's the chord progressions. Now let's sing it, you know, because then you get caught up in the technicalities and not in the message that's trying to be conveyed. And how, again, as I mentioned earlier, with regards to my own preparation of my heart before I can lead others, my heart has to be in the right place before the team can lead others. The heart has to be in the right position with regards to the lyrics of the song and how they exalt the Lord, how it might be a confessional thing with regards to a moment of sin that they've dealt with in their life. Or it may be a moment of connectivity with regards to faithfulness and a hardship that they've walked through. Or it may be something that they've witnessed. But if there is no connectivity there in between the heart of the worshiper, they can't authentically engage. Does that make sense? So I know that's probably a very long answer to your question with regards to that. Yes, it is my responsibility as a worship leader and as a worship pastor to engage with the people, but it is not my responsibility to make them worship. That is their responsibility unto the Lord. I can't make them worship.
Yeah, because I don't know how many times I've heard, you know, like, oh, we tried this new song and nobody was singing. And it's like, okay. Like, I guess the question is, like, do you experience that? And do you, if like, mm-hmm. hey, nobody's really, well, I guess it goes into what you're saying. Like, the words are just not connecting with these mm-hmm. people. So mm-hmm. we're not going to do it anymore. Is that something yeah. that you definitely?
Yeah, there have been times, absolutely. There have been times to where we've tried a song and there's been no connectivity with that. It may have been something that connected with our team or with me or something like that, but it didn't necessarily connect with the people in our church. And do we throw it away after one time? Not necessarily. We may try it again, but we may have a different tactic or a different approach to that to try to help make sure that we're engaging or connecting. We may share a personal aspect, or I may share a personal aspect in my journey that connects to the lyrics of the song that might encourage the people to say, okay, well, I can see, you know, his pain through this, or his growth, or his celebration through this. And you know what, there's a moment in my own life where I can connect with that as well. So yeah, I really want to, when that lyric comes through, I want to sing that with all of my heart to the Lord. So again, it just depends. It depends. Everything is subjective in that, as you know, and if you do it a couple of times and there's no connection, then yeah, I say you put it to bed and move on.
Yeah, no, that's great. I love that. That's really cool. Josh, thanks for talking. Yeah, it's just really cool talking to the different people involved in church services from all the different churches. Like it's really cool to hear your perspective on things and things to think about. Like, yeah, a lot of things to think about after this one. I like it.
Lots of things, brother. Yeah. There's always lots of things. Believe me, you know me. I think probably way too much about way too many things. There's no telling. But yeah, no, I appreciate the opportunity, Aaron. It's always good talking to you, my friend. We love you guys very, very much, and appreciate everything that you're doing in ministry to impact the kingdom as well.
Thanks, Josh.